This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Season 6, Episode 22 of Commentary, Trek Stars, a show which deals with the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm John.
And today we're joined by Grace from Women at Warp. How's it going, Grace?
It's going great. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks a lot for joining us. As is customary, with whenever we have a guest come on to the show, let's get a little info on your relationship with Star Trek. Now, I take it you've seen an episode or two in the past, maybe?
You could say that. I work on a podcast that I co-host called Women at Warp, where we talk about women's issues and female perspectives of Star Trek. It's very fun stuff. We just started, but you can find us online at Women at Warp. You can find us on Twitter at Women at Warp, and you can find us on our Facebook page, Women at Warp.
And of course, Women at Warp is right here on Trek FM and everything, but there's another Star Trek show that you've worked on, right?
No, I also, before that, worked on All Things Trek on Trek Radio with my co-host and friend, Oren Ashkenazi, who you can also find online. His writings are on Mythcreants, which is a blog that I also contribute to.
Cool. So when did you first become interested in Trek? Has it been a lifelong thing?
Well, I started watching it at a very young age. It was one of those things that was just kind of on TV when I was home alone. So it was there. And I didn't start getting really into it until high school and college when I was out on my own and, you know, in need of a little science fiction inspiration, which is always great.
Of course.
And just kind of stuck with me. It was a phase that never ended.
Excellent. Well, today we're going to be beginning a new series on a couple of Star Trek creators. This is a bit different from what we normally do, but Matthew on Twitter was tweeting us, and he said, "Hey, have you guys done Robert Block yet?" And I said, "No, but you know, I've always had this idea to do a Robert Block, Joseph Stefano combo series, because I always found it fascinating that Robert Block wrote the novel Psycho and Joseph Stefano wrote the movie Psycho, and then Robert Block went on to write for Star Trek the original series, and Joseph Stefano went on to write for Star Trek the Next Generation." And it's like this weird kind of, you know, dual thing, and it's both connects to Star Trek, and I don't know. I've always found that to be fascinating.
Yeah,
there's a cycle of Star Trek and a cycle of murder that goes hand in hand.
Yeah.
Yes.
I present that to you without context.
But it's true. So yeah, you know, and you know, John may not be able to be here for this whole series, and because of that, you know, I don't know. I really thought that it would be a good idea to have someone here for the entire thing, because it's going to be very intertwined. And so Grace is going to be with us for the next few weeks as we get through this Robert Block, Joseph Stefano combo, where today we're going to talk about their work on Star Trek. And then next week, we're going to talk about Block's book. And then the week after that, Stefano's movie. And then we'll talk about the two of them in relation to each other. So it should be fun times. And it's in October because it's Halloween and all that
because
stuff.
Because it's Shocktober.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, and as we'll find out today, anytime a Star Trek series of some sort does a Halloween episode, the results are always, like, spectacular. So yeah, so let's get right into this. Let's start with Robert Block. Just a little background. I found this quote, which I guess is a pretty famous quote, just to give you an idea of what this guy was like. He said, "Despite my ghoulish reputation, I really have the heart of a small boy. I keep it in a jar on my desk."
Classic.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was a Chicago guy, and he was a protege of Lovecraft. and he had written a lot of novels and short stories, and then he got into television stuff. But he had written, like, Psycho, the novel, back before he was really doing any stuff for the screen. But he would later go on to write a bunch of TV shows in particular, including Alfred Hitchcock Presents, I Spy, The Girl from U.N.C.L.E., Night Gallery, and Tales from the Dark Side. And then, of course, The Bates Motel, which exists now, is based on his book. So he definitely has a pretty big footprint in the world of television. And
no,
he also
no doubt.
Wrote three episodes of the original series, including What Are Little Girls Made Of, Cat's Paw, and Wolf in the Fold. So let's talk about those for a little bit. Well, I mean, first off, I don't know. Have you guys seen or read any of his other stuff, his non-Trek stuff, aside from Psycho?
No, only Psycho.
What about you, Grace? Have you read or seen anything that he's done?
I actually read Laurie last summer, which is one of his later novels, and it's not the greatest novel as far as horror stories go, but he really does have a great eye for building atmosphere, and he really is just a master hand at slow tension, which is really funny to see in contrast with his work on Star Trek, when it's all very much about the action of wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, because primetime TV, what are you going to do?
Yeah, yeah. I'm really curious, because according to Memory Alpha, each of these episodes was based on short stories that he had written himself. For What Are Little Girls Made Of, it was based on Queen of the Metal Men. And then for Cat's Paw, Broomstick Ride. And for Wolf in the Fold, Yours Truly, Jack the Ripper, which I guess he also adapted prior to this in an episode of a show called Thriller.
Yeah, Robert Block definitely had a love of the Jack the Ripper mythos and the story behind it. It's something that you see pop up a lot in his work, apparently.
Well, he lived only like 20 miles from Ed Gein, and I know that he said that, you know, that didn't really affect his work in Psycho, but like that type of thing just seeps into your atmosphere. I imagine just even being tangentially aware of that sort of, I don't know,
well,
that sort of atmosphere affects you.
It's kind of a postmodern kind of equivalent of the Jack the Ripper killings, or I think as close to it as Block would have probably been able to get. And the dude really did love learning about murders.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Like, we talked to a guy, we did a couple of episodes for this show with a guy who runs a history and mystery bookstore in town. And he was talking about how, you know, Robert Block is really known as being sort of, they call them Ripperologists, you know. And he's done a lot of writing on the subject, which is interesting. But yeah, I mean, you're right. It is kind of like, I mean, Psycho in a lot of ways is kind of an extension of that sort of thing too. It's interesting. But let's go back to the beginning of his Trek career and talk about What Are Little Girls Made Of. Now, this was only the eighth episode of the show, and it's the one with the robots, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
It's a really great episode for them to have had early on, I think.
Nurse Chapel's fiancé is presumed dead, and they go to a planet to look for him, and it turns out that he's alive, and then it turns out that he's a robot, spoilers, and there's a bunch of other robots on the planet, and all androids, and, you know, hijinks ensue. Yeah, I know.
Hey, also, Lurch is there.
Yeah, you can't write off Lurch.
Yeah.
This is true. So what did you guys think about What Are Girls Made Of? Grace?
Well, I think this is a totally fun episode, and I think it's a really great episode that they had early on in the series as kind of an establishment of what Star Trek was going to look like and the level of hijinkery that we would see and the level of sci-fi and just the level of anything can happen here. This is Star Trek. We are kind of making our own rules about what you can see on a week-to-week basis. And that makes it really fun, the fact that you don't know what's going to happen. And that kind of does make the twist at the end come out of nowhere. It's all very What am I trying to say? It's all very high concept and very shiny and bright and very theatrical. And it is very much a piece of establishing what Star Trek is all about right off the bat. Plus, we get some of those great kitschy outfits from the robot girls.
This is true. Yeah. Yeah. The costume design in general, like they had that
looks
weird.
Like she's wearing a handkerchief.
But also like the weird crisscross thing, like the guy, the guy has it too.
It's like a weird Frankenstein halter top. And I think it's hilarious. So he's not only building little girls, also their little wardrobes.
So what did you think about the episode, John?
No, Grace, I think you're right. It's a fun episode. I don't think that this, I think that it is dated a lot in terms of, you know, it's one of those things where it's like going back and reading an old Lee Brackett sci-fi book. It's like, oh, I understand what you were going for, but, you know, it's limitations of the time. But it's a fun episode. I wouldn't rank it. It's very middle of the pack. It's not one of the lesser episodes. It's not one of the greatest episodes, but it's a watchable episode. It's not something that I would skip.
Yeah, it's not offensively terrible or anything like that. It's one, but it's also not a standout. You know, I mean, there's the original series plays to me a lot like an anthology series in that there's some episodes which are absolutely the best television you're ever going to see, and there's other episodes which are absolute crap, and then there's the ones where you just kind of forget about them. And like every time I hear the title "What Are Little Girls Made Of," I'm like, that's one of those ones with like a bunch of kids, right? And then I start watching it. And I'm like, oh no, because because he's making. I got you now. Yeah,
it's a play on words.
Well, I always like to think of it as kind of one of the few Nurse Chapel centric episodes we get, which is nice to see the character kind of get her due. But in the course of the series, we don't really get to see that lived up to. But it's still nice to know she's got at least this episode.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. I mean, I would say this is probably the most Nurse Chapel centric episode, right? I mean,
yeah,
and it originally wasn't
absolutely
supposed to be, you know. I mean, I guess part of the thing is what this is only episode 8 of the show, so who knows how much Block even had to work with when he was writing it. But it was originally designed to be like a woman who hires the Enterprise to go look for her husband. It was Roddenberry who had the idea of rewriting it to make it Chapel, you know, and they had introduced her in an earlier episode, but then, you know, this is the first time where she really got to do something substantial, and maybe the only time that she really got to do something substantial. But but it is kind of cool to see her character, you know, get to do something. I wonder why they didn't use her like this more often in the show. You know, why they didn't make her one of the...
It's something you've got to wonder. You really do. A recurring thing we have in a lot of Star Trek is there being the potential for them to have women characters do more and it just kind of not happening or coming together.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And it's weird because it seems like Roddenberry definitely pushed for that early on. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering if there was some sort of studio interference or something like that. But there's also like a weird thing that happens where you do see a lot of female characters in the original series who are very similar to each
other. But
you
only really see them. They don't actually seem to do much aside from act as set dressing a lot of the time on the bridge or just in general.
That's true. But also like characters where they'll show up for one episode and do something and then they'll go away and you'll never see them again. Whereas it's like, well, why don't you have, you know, someone like Chapel play that role in that episode?
I guess they felt like they'd filled their active woman quota with just having one per episode around.
Well, I think, though, that there's also a function of, you know, to go back to what you said about the anthology series aspect of it. Like, if you have writers coming in and pitching spec scripts or, you know, working off of something, you know, like they're given, you know, especially this early in the series, it's like, okay, you have this, you know, these are the three big guys and write a script. Like, you know, was it a function of the time? Yeah. But I mean, weren't there also rumors that like, you know, I think the studio notes speak to it because Roddenberry said he sold this as like wagon train to the stars. So I think that you see...
Yeah, that's kind of the apocrypha of what this show was pitched as.
Yeah. And so it's like, you know, this the studio, I'm sure, was looking for, okay, when are you going to get the lead guy to go and be more, you know, more of a leading heroic
guy.
More
of a space cowboy.
Right. Yeah. Which, you know, which is what Kirk eventually evolved into.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't, on the whole, with this episode, I guess I think it's fine. You know, I don't know. Looking at it sort of in the context of the overall series, it is, you know, crazy to think that, like, well, this is the, you know, they really play up the mystery of, like, these are robots and they look like humans. And, you know, I mean, I guess looking at it, you know, as someone who watched a lot of these things out of order, I'm like, yeah, well, so what? They do that like a million times throughout the series. But this really was like the first time that that happened. And I guess that that is kind of a big deal, you know. And it works. It works for the most part, you know.
It's one of those episodes that I would have really loved to have gotten to watch back in the 60s when it was new without any of the full context of the entirety of Star Trek and just been like, what is this?
Yeah.
That would have been really fun to just kind of see out of the blue.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, for sure. All right, well, let's move on to the second episode that Block wrote, which came in season two. It was actually the first episode that they made in season two, although it didn't air until like episode eight or something. And that was Cat's Paw, the Halloween episode where they go to the planet with the witches and stuff, I guess.
And a spooky skeleton.
Yeah, and it's all scary and Halloween.
Ooh.
Back when...
This is your after-school Halloween special, kids. In space!
Yeah, exactly, basically. Exactly. You know, on Friday night, it's something that the kids could watch at their Halloween parties, you know, and on the weekends or whatever. So what did you guys think of Cat's Paw?
Great. Speaking of things that aged kind of funkily.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it is fun if you're a connoisseur of kitsch, kind of like I am, and just like to be like, oh wow, this is very silly.
Yeah, I agree that it is silly. If I were to be bold enough to put this in the middle of the pack, it would be at the tail end, right at that line of wouldn't recommend. Like, this is hardcore Trek fan territory at this point to sort of make it through this one, I think. If I were sitting down and introducing somebody to the series now, this wouldn't make the first several cuts of episodes that I would show them.
It's definitely an episode that stands out,
but maybe good or for bad. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I ultimately think that this episode's ridiculous, but ultimately kind of unwatchable. You know, I don't know. I think you guys, as far as Trek fans are concerned, are being very generous in your praise for it. I mean, I know that Char and Matt Hansen came on to my other show and used this episode for one of their drinking games because the only way that they could deal
well,
with
well, it's
watching
good to know that goodness came out of it.
Yes, yes. So at least that's something.
It's
However,
good to know that in the grand scheme of things, it serves a purpose to the Star Trek fandom.
Yeah, you know, it took 48 years or something like that, but, you know, it eventually served its purpose to get two people drunk.
Every episode exists for some purpose, and that's what this one is here for.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Grace, I think you hit on something where it's like it's the little kids episode. You know, like this would be accessible. You know, they're still trying to find their audience, arguably, by this point. So it's like, oh, look, we have a kid friendly episode that you like the monkeys and Scooby Doo.
Right.
Wouldn't you like to watch this?
Well, doing kid friendly and doing seasonal like holiday stuff. Those are two ways to try and make your show more accessible.
Exactly.
And they didn't exactly hit the mark on either of those, but bless them for trying.
It is really interesting. Like, whenever I watch this episode, I can kind of like feel the hand of the studio at play, and it really does feel like, you know, one of those episodes of a television show where it's like, this is airing at Halloween, so we're doing a Halloween episode, or, you know, this is our Christmas episode for the year or whatever. And it's the only episode of Star Trek.
It's one of those things where you watch it and you're like, oh, yeah, this is a Halloween episode.
Exactly, exactly. And it's the only episode of Star Trek which is like that. And I kind of love...
Seasonal events don't really work the same in space, do they?
No, but I love the fact that they tried, you know? I mean, like, if I were doing a Star Trek show, I would totally have a Christmas episode, because why not, you know?
Well,
I mean,
thinking like that is what gets us into the Star Wars holiday special territory, so it's a great path to
You know, there's no need to take a pot shot here. Come on.
You know, I mean, is there anything wrong with the Star Wars holiday special?
Yeah, there's a lot wrong with the Star Wars holiday special.
We'll save that for another conversation.
There's a reason why there's been an unholy quest for decades to try to kill the thing, but it just won't die.
Also, speaking of things that are really fun to base drinking games around.
Yeah, but you know what? Hey, maybe you could say that the Star Wars holiday special is Halloween special like Cat's Paw, because it truly is horrifying.
Ooh, so there you go. Yeah.
It got the terror that they were going for in this episode of Star Trek.
But that cartoon in the middle of it, though, is great, you know?
No, it's not.
Oh, yeah, it is.
No, it's not. It's terrible, too. All of it's terrible.
I love that that's...
Either way, you get something that's just uncomfortable to watch. I think we should have a special early Star Trek rating system that goes beyond good and bad and enters the realm of, I'm just uncomfortable watching this.
Yeah.
That needs to have its own sort of special level of measurement for a lot of the original series. Just
this episode.
Drag factor, if you will.
I give this episode 4 cat's paws, you know, out of 4. Can't be 5 because there's only 4, right? Anyway. Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Maybe if you engineered a cat.
Yeah, why couldn't it be
paws
a space
so
cat?
Give extra thumbs down.
You know, on the whole, I think this episode is horrendously bad, but I do I do find it interesting. Just its existence is something that I find interesting, and I find it interesting that they got Robert Block to write it, because it's like, oh yeah, you do, because you wrote Psycho, so you know what's scary. All right, write us something scary.
It's another kind of funny juxtaposition between, oh, he wrote this great story of suspense and thrills and shocking twist ending, and this. Mm-hmm. It just, those two works alone give you an interesting spectrum of his work to look at.
Yeah, yeah. For sure. And another sort of interesting piece of his I guess, overall work, which you see in both this and What Are Little Girls Made Of, are references to the old ones.
Yeah, he does definitely have some Lovecraft shout-outs in there.
Yeah. So, of course, the continuity nerd in me needs to sort of parse this information and figure out whether or not this means that, like, Cthulhu exists in the Star Trek universe.
Well, Cthulhu
when do we get that crossover?
Cthulhu exists outside time and space, so he exists in every continuity, arguably.
Do you think that maybe Idris Elba is playing Cthulhu in Star Trek Beyond?
Ooh, you know what? Let's start that rumor. I'm down with that.
All right. I like it.
Maybe Galaxy's Child was one of the Elder Gods all along.
There you go. See?
But yeah, honestly, I think if you're a writer like Robert Block and you are able to say that you had teachings from someone like Lovecraft, you have got to pay credit to that. And honestly, if I was in that position, I would just be dropping references to that all over. I would not be able to stop name dropping H.P. Lovecraft if I had the chance.
I wonder how much of it is a holdover from the short stories that these are based on, you know? If he had done a lot of Lovecraftian, you know, stuff, which apparently he did.
You do seriously wonder,
maybe
though.
These were just two of those stories, you know? I don't know. It's interesting.
It makes you wonder if those came into the story organically, or if he felt like he needed to shoehorn them in just so that he could say he could.
Yeah. It's curious. Mm-hmm. All right, so he did one more episode of the original series, and that was later on in season 2, and that was Wolf in the Fold. Now, this is an episode which is rather controversial, but at the same time, I think really interesting. So... what do you guys think of Wolf in the Fold? Grace?
Well, as a female critic, I feel like I have to be special levels of critical about it, because this episode is not great to its female characters on so many levels. We have, like, our opening scene is a woman being exotified and then being murdered, and we have a lot of women having bad things happen to them so that the guys have something to do on screen. And also we get that beautiful line of from Spock, of all people, that women are just easier and more intensely scared.
Yeah.
So this is one of those ones that I really kind of have to bite my tongue about usually when I'm talking about it. There's a lot to eye roll at. But yeah, it is interesting to get to see another look at Block's obsession with Jack the Ripper. And also the usage of actors in this is interesting and has led to this episode being repeatedly referred to as Piglet the Ripper.
Which I love, you know?
If the name works, stick with it.
That guy's such a good actor, though. He's in an Irvin Kershner movie called A Fine Madness with Sean Connery, and he's awesome in that, too.
He really is a great actor, and it is one of those things where you watch it and you're like, oh, wow, this guy's a very good actor. Too bad I can only ever hear him as that one character when he talks.
Yeah, it's crazy. Well, what do you think about this episode, John?
I just think that it's obvious that nobody was minding the store when it came together. this is in the very rear of the episodes. Basically, every type of production problem you want to illustrate that the original series had, I think, comes forth in this.
So this episode really is a teaching tool, then.
Yeah, basically. But I think what's frustrating about it for me is that I remember watching it as when I was much younger. The baseline concept of Jack the Ripper as this spirit that could jump from person to person, like, overshadowed everything else about it when I was very young, because that was such an awesome concept to me. And then the way they got rid of him at the end, where it's like on wide dispersal beam and everything, I was like, well, all right, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know, you go back and you watch it as an adult and you're like, wow, this is a mess. This is terrible. What on earth happened here? And yeah, it's
that could just be the tagline for the episode right there.
Yeah, what happened?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm. I kind of have the same opinion as you, John, in that, you know, I did first see it when I was a kid, and it was kind of a standout for me because of the Jack the Ripper element. You know, I mean, if we want to do like a line item veto of this episode, I think you could come up with some stuff which is pretty awesome. And, you know, I mean, all of the stuff that you're talking about, Grace, is definitely there. And, I mean, this is the episode that I was using in my argument with John Tenuto about, you know, whether or not, you know, Kirk was acting out of character in Into Darkness, you know. And he's like, you know, Kirk was never like that. He never, you know, did that. He was a big fan of women, but he never, like, objectified them. And I was like, this episode starts with him saying, like, hey, Scotty, you want one of those women over there? Because I can, like, totally get that for you, you know? And it's like, he totally did that here. But, I mean, I guess it is an outlier in that sense. And it's like, that stuff is like, this episode is kind of messed up, right? But then you've got the Jack the Ripper. But then you've got the Jack the Ripper stuff, which is, like you're saying, John, really awesome. And it's one of those episodes where when I watch it, I'm like, man, I really wish it didn't have all of the crap in it, because if you were to take out the crap, you'd actually have a really good...
Crap is a nice way of putting it.
You know, whatever. It's a PG-13 podcast. So, you know.
We'll let the listeners fill in their word of choice.
Sure, exactly. You know, but if you were to get rid of all that stuff, then I think what you'd be left with is something which is pretty solid, you know?
If you strip out everything except about 10 minutes of screen time, that's an awesome show.
Yeah,
it's
you've got a great 10 minutes there, and then there's the rest of the episode.
Yeah.
It's kind of there.
So I guess that's my feeling on Wolf in the Fold. I see it as like this bad episode which has the kernel of a good episode inside of it, you know? I don't know. Anyway, okay, so that's Robert Bloch. Let's move on to Joseph Stefano and talk about his work. Okay, now, he is primarily a screenwriter. He wrote a movie called The Black Orchid, which I'm ashamed to say I haven't seen. But apparently is pretty good, and it caught the attention of Alfred Hitchcock, and he hired him to write Psycho just a year after the book had been written. He was hired to write the screenplay for the movie. From there, obviously, Psycho became what it is, and he became a pretty hot commodity, I guess, in Hollywood. And Hitchcock in particular, who, you know, once he found someone who he liked, he liked to use them again and again and again, asked him to write a couple of post-Psycho movies for him almost immediately. But Stefano had already committed to a show that his friend Leslie Stevens was working on or developing at the time called The Outer Limits. And Stefano had committed to basically being the, I don't know if he was necessarily the head writer, but certainly, you know, one of the head writers. It was really Stefano and Stevens who put that show together. And he was heavily involved with the creation of that show and the entire first season. And because of that, he didn't write any more movies for Hitchcock. And
you gotta wonder what we could have had if he'd gone in a different direction.
Yeah, for sure. And Hitchcock, apparently, you know, being Hitchcock, was not too happy with Stefano's decision to snub him in favor of this, you know, science fiction television anthology. And, the two of them never worked together again.
Yeah, Hitchcock was known to hold a grudge.
Just a little
That's
bit.
That's putting
just,
it lightly,
just
yeah.
a tiny bit.
Yeah.
The Outer Limits thing is interesting because there is this weird division in the Outer Limits fan and professional community between seasons one and two. Seasons one and two are vastly different from each other, and there are people who think that season one is the best thing ever and season two is a pile of crap, and there are people who think that season one is extremely boring and season two is where it becomes next level television. And Harlan Ellison, you know, he wrote for season two, I believe, and he's a really big fan of that. He thinks that the first season is kind of middle of the road.
Wait. Harlan Ellison has an inflated opinion of something he worked on?
I know, it's strange, right?
Interesting. I got to take a minute here. I got to sit down and I got to take a deep breath. I can't believe that.
Yeah, that's not what I would have expected at all.
And Joseph Stefano, on the other hand, you know, worked really hard on season one. And when the studio came in and said, hey, guys, change this, Stefano was like, all right, I'm out of here, you know. So it's kind of interesting, the tale of two Star Trek writers. And if you go back to like 100 episodes ago, we did a whole series on Harlan Ellison's work on The Outer Limits. So check those out for sure. But yeah, anyway, so he did that. And then he was a writer on the Swamp Thing television show, and he also returned to the Psycho franchise to do Psycho 4 The Beginning, which, I don't know, have you guys seen that?
No.
Okay. I haven't seen
Can't
it
say
either.
I haven't seen it either.
But that was the television movie that I believe Anthony Perkins himself directed, and my friend, whose opinion I trust as much as I can anyone's opinion, I guess, said that it's actually good. He's like, you know, Psycho 2 and 3 are crap, but Psycho 4, they do some crazy stuff. And what it is it's basically, from what I understand, Norman Bates on a talk show describing his early childhood, you know, kind of like explaining how he became who he was. So I don't know. I don't know if it's good or not, but apparently it's something worth checking out at least. And then he, one of his last credits is for the Psycho remake that Gus Van Sant made, because they used the same exact script that they used for Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho. But in addition to all that, he also wrote an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation from season one, and that episode is Skin of Evil, which is the episode where Tasha Yar dies. So what did you guys think of Skin of Evil?
It's one of those funny episodes where I don't think anyone has a middle-of-the-road opinion about it. People either think this episode was totally important or absolutely loathe it. I've never met anyone who's on an in-between level.
Yeah,
I think that's fair. I remember watching this when it first aired and not liking it then. And I don't like it now either.
Yeah, I have to say I am the same way. I watched it. They killed off an important character early on. And then I just sat through the rest of the episode going, what is this?
Yeah, it's the opposite of Wolf in the Fold, where as a kid I was like, oh, this is a neat concept. And I went back as an adult, I'm like, ugh, this is a mess. I thought it was a mess through my whole life. Some things remain the same.
Yeah, you know, it's really weird. I mean, like, structurally and everything, it's a very bizarre episode. Like, I wonder whether or not it was...
Again, this is another case where you look at this episode versus the script to Psycho, and you say, really? That was the same guy? It's just such a stretch.
But at the same time, like, I see like the seeds of Psycho in here. I mean, maybe not the seeds of Psycho, but the, you know, glimpses of Psycho in this mm-hmm. thing, you know? Like I wonder what it was like on paper, you know? I mean, for like a lot of these, you know, episodes and stuff, and like reading some of these behind the scenes books, and you hear about how shows were altered for whatever reason, you know, lots of times because of budget and stuff. Like,
yeah, you've really got to wonder what a first draft of this would have looked like.
Yeah, especially since it was there's two writers credited on this episode. Stefano wrote the story, and he's co-credited as writing the screenplay with I think it's Hannah Louise Shearer, if I'm not mistaken. And so I wonder what was changed. I wonder if this episode existed before Tasha was leaving the show, you know? But as it stands, it's weird in terms of its pacing and everything. Like, you would think, like, killing off a main character would be a big deal, right? And that would have, like, a moment. Like, that would be a big death. And really,
it's really underplayed, isn't it? Again, compare that to Psycho, where the death of a main character early on is this huge, shocking thing that comes out of nowhere. With this, it's just kind of like, oh, she did. Bye. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. And then they bring it up again at the end, and that's it. It's just such an underwhelming death that it's kind of shocking.
Yeah, you know, it's strange. It's almost treated like the way that they treat your average red shirt death. You know, it's similar to the deaths of those two dudes at the beginning of What Are Little Girls Made Of, where it's like, oh man, a guy died. What was his name? I forget.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? And then it's not until the end where, you know, they have their little eulogy thing. Which feels really tacked on, you know, to the episode.
Absolutely. If you watch the rest of the episode, you can just kind of cut that scene out and have it be completely separate, and it would probably make about as much sense.
Yeah, and that the eulogy itself is like, I mean, she makes it sound like these were the most important people in her life, you know, for years and years and years, when in reality she, knew them for like 4 months or something, you know, mm-hmm. for the most part.
But it was very, very impactful.
These were the most important people in her life.
I mean, it's
that, and the fact that she had to give her own eulogy in front of a Windows 98 screen.
Yeah, what can you do? You know, 21st century technology wasn't the best. But I don't know. It's a strange episode. But that being said, it's very, like, tonally, like, the stuff on the planet, I think, is really crazy. Like, the music and everything, it has this very sort of, like, intense, creepy vibe to it, which I think works really well. And conceptually, you know, even though you have this, you know, tar monster thing, which looks absolutely ridiculous, right? Like, conceptually...
It looks like something you'd see out of a Goosebumps episode.
Exactly. But conceptually, I think it's kind of this really interesting concept of like, you know, this is a thing that was, you know, pure evil, and whoever it was, you know, wanted to shed itself of this evil, and they left it stranded on this planet. And even though it's pure evil, like, I can't help but feel bad for the thing, you know? It's kind of sad. He just wants to be loved, just like everyone else, right? He can't help it if he's pure evil.
Okay. Yeah.
He is what he is.
Well,
man.
You know what? You got Roddenberry's point then, because I think that like wasn't there some draft where they were going to actually. I don't know, but like I remember reading somewhere that like Roddenberry stepped in and made it apparent that they couldn't like judge the creature or something like that. He's like, well, I mean, basically what you said, Mike, where it's like, well, sure, it's evil, but you know, hey, and it, like that was. I think that was part of Roddenberry's desire with the episode. I don't know. I don't know where I read that, but I'm convinced that if they had made this just a few years later, this creature would have been CG.
Yeah, probably.
Even with limited CG back then. I mean, this is definitely something where you can see where they would approach it. You see the limitations of the tech, what they were trying to achieve on screen. Would the creature have been more successful if it had been CG? Probably not, because back then that was still limited in and of itself.
Yeah.
But the concept of the creature is neat.
Yeah, I think that's where a lot of people kind of get this derisiveness for the episode, and the fact that there's a lot of neat things happening. We've got a neat concept for a villain. We've got this interesting atmospheric stuff going on down on the planet. It has potential, but it just hits left of the mark, and that makes it even more annoying than if it had just been straight up terrible all around.
Yeah, on the whole, it's a pretty crappy episode. But I mean, as far as season one Next Gen goes, you know, it's definitely not the worst. You know, at least there's some interesting ideas in there. You know,
yeah. It's one of those things where having watched through the first season of TNG up until that point, it's just kind of like, what? What did I expect?
Yep, par for the course.
Par for the crappy course.
Well, let me ask you guys this question. I don't know. Have you heard Jonathan Frakes tell his story about the making of this episode?
I have not.
I would love to hear it.
It's I've heard him tell it a million times at conventions, on DVDs and everything, and he talks about how like he had to go into the tar pit, right? And then like the elevator raises him out of the tar pit and he falls out onto the, you know, surface or whatever, and he's covered in this black, you know, oil stuff, and you know the director yells cut or something like that, and then LeVar Burton like leans over him and he's like, I would have never done that, or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. and every time he tells the story he laughs hysterically and the audience laughs hysterically, and every time I hear the story I'm like, I don't get it. Wait, what? Where's the joke? I don't understand what's going on. And I just want someone to be able to explain why this story is so hilarious that he's been telling it for the past, you know, 20 years. I don't know. Anyway, never mind. We'll move on.
Well, we'll give a homework assignment to the class. Go and watch it online and reach out to Mike directly and let him know if you figure out why this is so funny.
Yeah, email us at comtrackstars@gmail.com.
Explain the comedy. It'll be great. Yeah.
Explain the joke to us, and we will read your explanation on the air next week.
So. Yes.
Okay. All right. So that's it for Block and Stefano. That was the only thing that Stefano had done on Star Trek. Any final thoughts on either one or both or what you think this signals in terms of their work which they had done before this, I guess?
Again, I don't think either of them are actually on par with either of their involvement with Psycho, but it is true that there's kind of a vein of Psycho-ness in it that it's interesting to see kind of carry over. Other than that, I think I'd need a much bigger look at both of them's frame of work to get a better idea of that. But yeah, it's just another thing that you get when you're starting to look into writers who worked on Star Trek.
Yeah.
It's a commonality.
Yeah, for sure. What about you, John?
Psycho is a fantastic book, and it's one of my favorite films of all time. Will always be. Absolutely love everything about the book and the movie. And overall, you know, if you're going to look, if these Star Trek episodes had been the only thing they had done besides Psycho, it's not a good indicator. Like I wouldn't look at these things and be like, well, obviously they're good all around. No, Psycho seems like a flash in the pan. So honestly, I'm motivated to go and read more of their other work or watch more of their other work, because there is no way these two gents, you know, basically combine forces to help produce the, you know, one of the seminal horror works of all time. Like these are not indicative of their overall talent level. I refuse to believe that.
Yeah.
You want to know where the real change occurred.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm pretty much in agreement, with both of you. It's weird. It's one of those cases, you know, there seems to be a thing which we discover on this show, you know, where lots of times it's like, this person wrote this episode of Star Trek. It's one of the best hours in television history. And so let's take a look at everything else that they did. And everything else is like, yeah, that's good. That's okay. You know, whatever. Here, it's the exact opposite where, you know, you look at their Star Trek stuff and you're like, well, why would I be talking about this person? And the reason is because the stuff that they did outside of Star Trek is some of the best stuff ever, right? So I'm really looking forward to revisiting both the book and the movie, and also sort of, you know, comparing and contrasting them and seeing if we can kind of figure out what is unique that each of them, you know, sort of brought to that mythology, which I think is a really interesting mythology. So yeah, I'm looking forward to the next few weeks. It's going to be exciting. Well, Grace, thank you very much for joining us today. Where can people find you on the network and on the internet and whatnot?
Well, if they're listening to Trek FM, they can hear me on Women at Warp. They can find us on the Women at Warp website and on Twitter at Women at Warp. You can find me on Twitter at BoneCrusherJenk, and I hope to see more people looking into it. And I can't wait to discuss Psycho with you guys some more.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to it too. You know, thank you very much
because we all needed to bring some more murder into our lives.
Hey, we all go a little crazy sometimes.
Yep. All right, thanks again for having me.
Thank you. We'll talk to you next week. All right. Well, that was a good start to this new series. You know, I'm excited about this series, right? I mean, it's something. It's one of those high concept things which I've had since we started this show, and I'm glad that we were able to actually do it, you know?
I think that the high concept things are your trademark on this show. And I agree with you though. This is a fun one. This is a fun little rabbit hole to go down. And you know, I hope that everybody else is going to enjoy it as much as we are so far.
Yeah. To pull back the curtain for a second, a couple of the high concept things which we're not going to get to do, which I will always regret, but we'll do them in some form or another somewhere down the road. One was Stuart Baird and looking at the movies which he re-edited to get the job on Nemesis. That would have been super cool. We'll deal with it somehow in the future, somehow, whatever.
We'll work it in.
And then the other one would be looking at all of the movies that Kurtzman and Orci wrote as sort of a mirror to their personal relationship and their career. That's actually something which it was an article that this guy Matt Singer, who's a film critic, wrote. And, you know, I thought that was really kind of a very interesting idea and something worth further exploration, but it also would take like 3 months to do, so we're not doing that either.
Yeah, that's a little long.
But we did get to the Block Stefano thing, so yeah, at least that's something. And for Halloween,
Shocktober.
Yeah,
sorry, I can't help myself.
That's okay. And it really does kind of work out perfectly for me personally, because I'm in the middle of the book right now. I'm gonna finish it up. And then we're going to record the thing about the book next Monday. And then the day after, I'm going to get to see it again on the big screen.
So jealous that you're going to get to see it on the big screen. I've never seen Psycho on the big screen, and I so desperately want to see it on the big screen.
Really? Because they show it like every day. Actually, if you have a Cinemark near you, I'm pretty sure they're showing it on Wednesday.
Cinemark does not exist in this territory, my friend. We're We're Regal Cinemas town over here.
Check, because it's like part of like a Fathom thing. There's a lot of theaters that are doing it. Like, type it, go to IMDb and click on like showtimes locally. I wouldn't be surprised if it's actually playing at a theater near you on Wednesday.
All dependent on other things that are happening in my life.
What else is going on in your life, which is more important than seeing Psycho on the big screen? I mean, come on. We need to have priorities here, right?
That's true. I don't know. I've lost my way.
Oh, well. I'm sure you'll have time to watch it next month on the big screen if it comes out then, you know.
Yeah.
Because there won't be anything going on at that point.
Not at all.
So anyway, yes, this is going to be a good series, and thanks to Grace for stepping in and joining us for this, because it'll be fun. It'll be fun and cool. But yeah, it's been fun talking about Block and Stefano today, but that isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM this week. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
You did good, Captain Kirk.
Is he in that last shot or not?
Yes, he is. Oh, wait a minute.
Oh, wait a minute.
Did they pull a Weekend at Bernie's or something? Like, they just hold him up there, you know? He's okay. Well, it's cool.
Earl Grey.
Daddy, do pets have a Nexus too?
The Pexus.
Kirk had a dog in the Nexus too, didn't he?
Butler. Butler is now Shadow. So we have the adventures homeward bound of Butler, Porthos, and Spot. Will they make it back to their owners in Montana?
The Orb.
Well, apparently, and did you find this interesting, Matthew? Apparently, the Navark reports directly to the prophets.
Which is awkward because they don't always show up for meetings, so...
Right.
Yeah.
Plus, you never know what time the meeting is really going to be, right?
That is true. It could have been yesterday, and you might have missed it.
The Ready Room.
Do you think this episode would have been so popular and remain a fan favorite if the Enterprise had been overrun with zebra mussels?
To the journey!
It's so average American. It's like Joe Smith. And no offense to Joe Smith, it's just, I could have tried a little harder. I mean, come on.
Might as well call her Jane Doe. So far, not off to a good start. So far, I'm judging you, Shark.
Give me a moment.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
And I remember like being like in midair, having this conversation with his brother and saying, this could be the best Star Trek ever, and then just like landing on the ground.
Is it a metaphor for how you feel about Voyager as a series?
No comment.
The 602 Club.
The young adult novels have their own framing devices that tie in to The Force Awakens. And I think that if they had put those front and center, maybe even expanded one of them, or what have you, I think that would have served the strategy better. I definitely do.
Literary Treks.
Well, that really is the bottom line, you know? And I think it's particularly difficult with this group of characters because in some ways you're looking at folks who literally are the brightest and the best, right? So in some ways we need them not to have feet of clay. We need them to be so much better and stronger than we are so that we have something to shoot for.
Women at Warp.
There's always a touchstone, and this was as close to a touchstone as they ever got with Pulaski.
Plus she banged Riker's dad.
Oh, Andy.
I'm sorry, I just think it's so funny.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. And beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our show on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well. Another way that you can help keep all of our shows coming to you each week is to become a patron of the network on Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels along with all the great perks we have for you. These perks include early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, seats on our content development team, and more. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. Hey, do us a solid and leave us a review on iTunes.
Yeah, a 5-star review on iTunes.
Or 3.5, whatever.
No, we're a 5-star podcast. Okay. Come on.
All right, fair enough. But yeah, leave us a review on iTunes. Tell us what you think. That'll help us out. That'll help other people find the show when they search iTunes and everything like that. And yeah, we'll read your review on the air, unless you don't want us to, in which case we won't. But yeah, help us out.
We'll read it in a foreign language if you don't want us to read it. Like if you write it in English, we'll read it in some foreign language that somebody would have to translate.
That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that.
We'll work for it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. there's other ways that you can contact us, too. You can fill out the form on trek.fm/contact, or you can leave us a voicemail in the sidebar on the show page, or go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. We'll play that on the air. You can find the network on Twitter at TrekFM. You can find the network on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. You can also find the Babel Conference on Facebook, where we discuss all sorts of fun topics in regards to Star Trek and other things, but mainly Star Trek. Just type the Babel Conference into the search field on Facebook. That's B-A-B-E-L. Or you can go to our website at trek.fm and click on the discussion tab on the menu bar, and that'll take you there too. John, where can people find you on the internet?
Well, you can find me crawling around on Twitter at Kessel Junkie, and you can find me on a show called Words with Nerds that airs every Thursday on iTunes and Stitcher and all of that, where my buddy Craig and I go a little crazy in the nerd universe, as it were.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah, you can find me right here on Trek FM doing Standard Orbit with Drew. We've got our big 100th episode coming up on Monday, so be sure to check that out. It's going to be off the hook, crazy, insane. I mean, you guys heard the Earl Grey episode 100, right? Where like everyone from the network was on there doing voices, and there was like a massive role-playing game or whatever. Like, yeah. Imagine that times like 1,000.
Yeah.
And that's what we did on Standard Orbit number 100.
Yeah.
And by that, I mean, basically, we just did a normal episode of the show, but, you know, with an interesting hook. So check
it
out.
The hook brings you back, or so I've been told.
Yes, yes. But yeah, no, check it out for sure. There is some surprising stuff in episode 100. It's an episode you're not going to want to miss. There is a psycho-like gear shift twist in the middle of episode 100. And you will definitely want to check it out. And I'm not lying about that, okay? There is. Yes. Anyway, is very psycho-like. Like, even to the point of, like, points of view changing midway through.
It just messes with your head.
Yeah.
It takes you completely by surprise. But then when you go back and you re-listen, you marvel at how could you possibly have missed it.
This is actually, like, everything that we're saying right now is not an inaccurate description of episode 100 of Standard Orbit. Anyway, you just have to tune in and find out. It's crazy. There's even like secret guest stars on it.
Ooh.
Yeah. Anyway, just check it out. Just check it out. That's all I'm saying. But you can find me there. You can also find me on commentarytrackstars.com, where I do commentary Trackstar babies. We do have a commentary for Cat's Paw, which I'm not on. So if you're sick and tired of hearing us, you can hear Char and Matt Hansen get drunk while watching Cat's Paw. So there's that. You can also find on there a commentary which my friend Josh, the guy who we were talking about who says that Psycho 4 the beginning is good, we did a commentary for the original Alfred Hitchcock Psycho on there, so you can check that out over there too, if you want. It's one of our better episodes, if I do say so myself. And cool. So also I'm not 100% positive, but I'm gonna try to do a commentary for maybe one of the Robert Block episodes, like maybe Wolf in the Fold or something like that, with Tisto on commentary track Star Babies for an upcoming episode. So maybe we can get a little more sort of like sidebar.
Take it easy on yourself and go for What Are Little Girls Made Of.
Honestly, I think Wolf in the Fold, there's more to talk about there. I don't know.
Okay, that's a fair comment.
I mean, with What Are Little Girls Made Of, I think I'd be like, I don't know what to say here. Oh, there's two Shatners on screen. All right. Wow. They hacked
more
that
Shatners,
Gibson
more fun.
Yeah, you know, but aside from that, it's like, what are you going to say? You know, nice costumes.
Yeah, they seemed comfortable.
I guess so. Anyway, so that's where you can find me. You can also find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K, and you can find the show on Twitter at ComTrackStars, and you can email us at ComTrackStars@gmail.com. Before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor who helps us bring commentary, Trek Stars, and all of our shows to you each week. And our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all of the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have the time for. Now, there's very obviously a book which you should be reading this week on Audible. What book is that, John?
Well, your homework for this week, dear listener, is to go over to Audible and get Psycho, written by Robert Block, narrated by Paul Michael Garcia. And just in case you're on the fence about it, if you haven't seen the movie or know the story, it was a dark and stormy night when Mary Crane glimpsed the unlit neon sign announcing the vacancy at the Bates Motel. Exhausted, lost, and at the end of her rope, she was eager for a hot shower and a bed for the night. Her room was musty, but clean, and the manager seemed nice, if a little odd. This classic horror novel, which inspired the famous film by Alfred Hitchcock, has been thrilling people for 50 years.
Yeah, it has. It thrilled me back in 98. I read it when the Gus Van Sant movie came out, and I'm like, whoa, that's crazy. And then I'm listening now to Audible. I'm listening to the Audible book, which I got off of Audible. And it's actually a really good, like the narrator is really good. He's very sort of Anthony Perkins-like. And it's really good. He's very good at pauses, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, and those are very important in this book.
Yeah,
very, very important. Knowing how to deliver this book is, and it really is. Even if you've seen the movie, it's engrossing.
Yeah,
because there it's one of those things where the differences are just slight enough that it's almost like if you're very familiar with the movie, it's almost like seeing like an alternate cut, or, you know, like just a little bit different and just enough to keep you interested.
Yeah. I would add to that, but I don't want to spoil, but it's going to be hard enough, you know, the next couple of weeks, because since we are doing a comparison for the finale, I really want to try to look at the book on its own terms and look at the movie on its own terms first, and then do the comparison. And that's really hard to do when something like, you know, the movie is so, like, drilled into your brain, you know?
I mean,
it's like a part of, you know, American mythology, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it remade the landscape for horror movies for sure. And I mean, it's like, it had such an influence that, I mean, one of my favorite horror movies of all time has always been the original Halloween by John Carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
And he named one of the characters one of the characters is named Sam Loomis as an homage to Psycho, which is what he was modeling Halloween after.
When it stars the daughter of the star of Psycho.
The ties are just unending with that.
Yeah. So, yeah. Definitely take a look at that. You can get it on Audible for free since you listen to Trek FM. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is, just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting Commentary, Trek Stars, and the network. All right. All right. I'm excited. Gonna read this book. Gonna watch this movie. Gonna talk about these books and
movies.
You
can't go wrong. You can't go wrong with these.
Yeah, yeah. If you haven't seen Psycho or read Psycho, do yourself a favor and check them out for sure. Do use these episodes of Star Trek as the basis for your
no.
decision.
No. Psycho, way better.
Yes.
Way better than anything we talked about this time around.
Way better than pretty much anything we've ever talked about.
There's a reason it's considered a classic.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. So, and check out the Gus Van Sant Psycho too, because it's awesome.
No.
All right. Well, on that note, we will depart, but we will be back next week with Grace to discuss Robert Bloch's novel, Psycho.